everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them can make a play against and make a dash win. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the Tide, Honey Badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, I just love the sweet smell of cigar smoke in Bryant Denny in late October, huh?
Man, absolutely. But I have to tell you that while the 45-7 is always a great score, the 52-0 would have been a little sweeter.
That would have been sweet. And what's funny is the game was unfolding. I was, you know, thinking back to the scores that we had predicted and you had said 35-7 and I had said 52-6 and I wasn't sure where they were going to come up with a six. And turns out an 85-yard pick six is about as surprising a score as you can get. And I kept rooting for that last touchdown. Let's get one more so I can win the score. But I think you won the score closest without going over.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, man. It's one of our biggest rivalry games, and obviously we've got a nice streak under Saban. And you know, when you and I were in school there, we just wanted a win, right? We just wanted Peyton Manning to freaking graduate already and just get a win. But in this situation, 45-7 and 52-0, it just reads totally different on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I don't want to age myself, but there was a year in college that we beat Tennessee 42-30, and that felt like a blowout.
Yes.
So
this is us being spoiled, right? I mean, I'm not trying to sound spoiled when I say this, but, I mean, you know, we could go back and look and see, you know, have we hung 50 on Tennessee while you and I have been following, you know, Alabama football, you know, from the time we were teenagers, and I don't know that we have. And so hanging 50 on the other teams we did is great. That's awesome. But hanging 50 on Auburn or Tennessee, I mean, that's extra. That's extra.
Oh, yeah. That's extra. That's extra good. I completely agree. And they do seem a little impervious to us hitting the 50 mark. But, you know, and kind of along the same token. And at some point, I don't know if I just become a bad Alabama fan, but was that the most boring 600-yard performance you've ever seen?
Man, you know, it was. It was just methodical. I mean, like,
right. You
know, we'll break this down here, you know, big picture, when we go to the offensive side of the ball here in more detail. But, you know, it just – he's using his weapons. And you see similarities from what the New England Patriots do. And when the New England Patriots, you know, bring in their three tight ends and they incorporate their three tight ends into the offense and they incorporate multiple running backs and – you know, they get a lot of people involved in the game and you see a lot of this and it goes back to what we spoke about, right? It just makes it very hard to stop. And you're spreading the field and you don't know where they're coming next. And so now you throw the ball to the tight end between the hashes and you're thinking, well, damn, you haven't let him do that for a year and a half. And why are you doing that today against me? Like, why are you deciding to do that now?
Right. Well, break us into offense. You hit a couple of bells there. What are some things that stood out to you on offense?
You know, the first thing has to be, you know, playing the ball with the play action, which we want to see more. We've been asking for more. Playing the play action and getting the tight ends involved between the hashes. And, you know, that right there is something that, as Gary Danielson correctly said, they did not allow him to do last year. Now,
right. Between
you and me, I don't know why they didn't. I don't buy that he's that much more further along that you can give him the leash to do that. I don't buy that because last year you had O.J. Howard.
Yeah.
No offense to the current tight ends. All the tight ends we have today rolled up in one is not O.J. Howard, you know, where they are right now. That's no disrespect to Irv Smith and to Hale and those guys, but right now, body of work, right? O.J. Howard last year, why didn't you get him the ball? So now we're getting him the ball. And I think it has to be because the offensive coordinator. And it has to be because he did that, he saw that done when he was on the staff at New England. And he's slowly just building more and more into this offense.
Yeah, I think you hit a couple of marks there, and I think you're spot on. I think you have to look at the offensive coordinator, and you know, sort of enough said on that necessarily, but I think you're right. I think the offense is growing and expanding each week, and I have sort of been expecting the tight ends to get involved, and we saw some of that on Saturday, and I thought Irv looked really good with a couple of his passes, and you know, by extension, I think Jalen looked really good delivering the ball. A lot of those were timing patterns. He wasn't waiting for the receiver to break. He wasn't waiting for the receiver to be open. You know, he hit the back of his drop and then released the ball. And that looked very nice, those strikes down the middle of the field. I like to see more and more in that incorporated. And you talked about sort of the methodical, who's the weapon, where's the ball going to go. You know, again, we saw six different, you know, running backs in the game, eight different pass catchers, two of which were tight ends and two of which were running backs. I continue to love the ball distribution that we're seeing. It's it makes the Tide offense incredibly difficult to anticipate and defend.
No, it does. And I will say, as you compare this current coordinator and the scheme they are running, you know, they are showing more commitment to running the ball, right, than Lane Kiffin did. And yes. So the play action pass was not something that Lane Kiffin really incorporated into this offense. And right. If you weren't really establishing the run and beating people over the head, averaging 300 yards a game, then you're not going to really be able to do that well at play action. But no offense to Jalen, you and I could have completed those balls to Irv Smith across the middle. It's not a long pass, right? It's much easier than throwing it to the sideline. That's a 30-yard sling. If you and I were quarterback and we're rushing for 300 yards a game and we set up the play action, these guys are going to bite, right? I mean, it's going to be there between the hashes. Obviously, you know, it's a play that they probably could have done earlier in the season just because of the success they've had running the ball. But this absolutely is a given just due to all the circumstances of what this team is doing with their effectiveness on the ground.
Yeah, I agree. It is a wrinkle that could have been introduced at a lot of different times. And so, you know, you think about when are you going to fold in, you know, these different variances or these different, you know, opportunities. I think it's one we've intentionally sort of held. It's intentionally one we kind of sat on. And so here we are sort of bringing it out in this game. And so I look to see it develop. I look to see it flourish. But you know, all the same, it's something I'm glad that we're rolling into the offense. And I agree, it's not the hardest pass that he's made, but he has demonstrated, Jalen has demonstrated a tendency in not wanting, and this is more mental maybe than physical, but he has demonstrated a tendency in wanting to throw to an open receiver rather than throw open a receiver or throw in anticipation of the receiver being open. It has been much more of see open receiver, throw to open receiver. And so I'm glad to see, and again, it's small steps, but I look at this in some respect, maybe I'm more generous than you on this, and that's fine. But I do see it as an incremental development in this game.
Oh, no. I don't know that he would have put the ball – okay. He is not consistently still putting the ball where he needs to, okay? He consistently threw several balls behind receivers in this game.
Yeah.
Made very difficult passes that could have been very easy. Calvin Ridley made him look really good a couple times on passes that we could have had more yards after the catch.
Sure, sure.
If he would have thrown the ball where it needed to be.
No, that's fair.
But on these throws across the middle, he put them right where he should have been. So my point is it's just an easier throw for a quarterback because you're going 10 yards over the middle.
Yeah.
Instead of 20 yards to the sideline, you know, or 20 yards down the field to the sideline, which is now a 40-yard pass.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. And so
– yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I think it's more the timing of when we've rolled things out, and I may be sort of playing too heavily into this being evolution as opposed to this being just when we're rolling out this wrinkle.
So well, and another thing too, you know how they always talk about getting the quarterback confidence early in games, you know, getting young quarterbacks confidence.
Yep.
I would see this as a like something to bring out of your bag of tricks early, because yes, you are running the ball so well. This would be like something I would try, like with some of his first few passes, just to get him in a rhythm. Like
yeah,
every game.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and along those lines, right? We want to make sure that he's comfortable. A lot of his career, one of the things that we've done to make his comfortable has either been a jet sweep. This year, it's more of getting the ball early to Calvin Ridley, and historically over his playing career thus far, it's been him running the ball. And what's interesting is he only had, you know, 5 carries in this game, and there seemed like there were no design runs. And so I thought that was an interesting development in this game, where I don't know that we're taking it away as much as we're just not calling those plays, and enforce is a strong word, but having him depend on his pocket abilities a little bit more. And again, that may be a forced progression in his game as well.
Well, he had 5 carries for 14 yards, to your point. His longest one of those carries was 7 yards. And I dare say, if we go back and look at his stats over his entire career, he's never had – well, I just quickly pulled up this year. Game 1, 15 carries, then 10, then 11, then 9, then 10, then 14, then 10, now 5.
Yeah.
So to your point, in game 8, it is half the carries he was having in an average game.
Right. And tell me, he's had 20 carry games.
He has. And this speaks to nothing seemed to be designed at all to him. And you and I have talked about, why do you take a chance of getting him hurt?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the kind of horses that you have. Most teams are lucky to have 2 running backs, if they're lucky, that they would roll out there, much less 5.
Right.
And so, once again, you know, hopefully this is just them getting more comfortable with the weapons around him and saying, you know, we need to preserve him like we're preserving Damian, because, you know, he gets knocked out of the game in Auburn, and we're screwed.
Right.
Okay, I don't mean it that way, because obviously Tua's done some things, but he's still a freshman, and you don't want your quarterback knocked out of the game before you go to the SEC championship and change your whole season.
Yeah, you don't want to lose. Yeah, you don't want to lose that. I completely agree. But it's, you know, and one thing that I think is great in the fact that we're doing this is he's not regressing as a runner. You know, that skill is still there. And if we needed to lean on that, we still could. And so that's great, right? And so as a defense, and again, how hard is it to defend Alabama? You still have to defend it. And, you know, just because maybe we took a week off doesn't mean that LSU may not see a diet of it, right? And he might be just as dynamic as he ever has been. If that's what we think is needed, we say the coaching staff, if we think that's what's needed as part of the game plan. So
sure. But to your point that we've said before, right? I mean, we want him to be a pocket passer, and we want him to run only when he has to move the chains, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're carrying the ball 10 or 15 times a game, even though you look like you're not getting tired, are you going to be able to sling it 20 to 30 times in a game and run 20 times? Sure. Are you going to be able to throw it as well as right. you would if you didn't run so much? So I just think it actually helps him have more success on the field due to the weapons around him if you just kind of let him sit there in the pocket and only run as last resort.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think we're landing same page there. What else on offense stood out to you?
I love the just kind of hit a few things. I love the call to Josh Jacobs on the first drive.
Yes.
You know, just once again, you know, we've talked about this on the last few shows about, you know, just giving these guys, putting these guys in situations where, you know, where they can be successful. It was interesting how we utilized the running backs and when we brought them in the game. you know, it kind of, there is a pecking order, right? There is a pecking order to the five deep on the depth chart.
Yep.
You know, and so we're starting to see more of a rhythm. Like Najee Harris always comes in when Tua comes in, you know, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to mention real quick is early in the game, we had, well, let me just put the statement out here for you, and then I'll get your feedback, and then I'll elaborate. I think for the first time this season, from my opinion, I noticed a clear change in the starting wide receivers, and Cam Sims and Robert Foster are no longer starters. They run with the second team. I don't know if you noticed this, but for the first game to me, game eight, they were clearly brought in an obvious situation of we're bringing the twos in. They didn't really rotate with the three freshmen. Ruggs really wasn't in the rotation with the other guy. I mean, Devonta Smith and Jerry Jeudy and Calvin Ridley were the starters, and they were consistently the guys. And then later in the game, they worked Ruggs in, and you started seeing Foster and Sims. But Foster and Sims has lost ground to Jeudy and Smith.
Categorically, I will agree with that. And I think that has been an evolution that has been, sort of been progressing in that direction. Robert Foster, we've spent time talking about him and why we think, you know, translate that into why we think he's, you know, he's losing ground. Cam Sims, I'm not ready to bucket him in the same way that I do Foster, because I think he did come in early. I think he did contribute. He made a couple of nice catches. I think he's losing ground sort of individually to some of the freshmen. I'm not yet ready, and it's not that I'm disagreeing with you. I'm not yet ready to say that he's fallen completely out of the first wave, but he's slipping. But
well, let me say
a lot of Cam Sims early.
Let me say it this way. Cam Sims had one catch for 14 yards. Mm-hmm. It was a nice catch. Cam Sims and Foster did not start the game. They were not in the game at the beginning of the game for the first couple series. And I want to throw this out to you. I think it's because the freshmen have shown a willingness to get in there and have learned from Calvin Ridley how to block in the running game.
Yep.
And Jerry Jeudy and Devonta Smith, specifically Devonta Smith, can block like a fiend. And I think that they are taking some of these moments from this team with a higher emphasis on running the ball, because of their ability to block on the edges in the running game. And that's why I think Foster and Cam Sims are losing ground.
Yeah, I agree. I think Robert Foster's attitude is probably, you know, just to call it as I see it, I think that's contributing as well. I think with Cam, it's as much as the blocking is spot on. I agree with that. And there's a want to.
There's more physical.
No, I know you, but you have to want to do that. And Cam Sims is big enough where he ought to be a better, you know, look, Cam Sims ought to be a better blocker than Devonta Smith. He just should, right? Look at him side by side. But if he's not, then it's because he doesn't want to be. I agree, right? Everything you said is right. Also, think the athletic upside is higher, and so you start looking at how do we get our most athletic playmakers on the field. Oh, and it just so happens that they're the freshmen. Oh, and it also just so happens that they are willing blockers. I think all of that sort of stacks together, and so you mix up that witch's brew, and who do you end up with as the first four receivers on the field? It's the three freshmen and Cal.
Well, and by the way, I'm not saying anything about what Sims and Foster can't do.
Sure.
I'm just saying when I would rewind a play four and five times, I would consistently see Devonta Smith and Jerry Jeudy running a route like it was going to be a pass, and the DB had no idea it was a run, and they went and locked up on that defender and they drove him 5 yards down the field.
Right.
And I didn't see it one time. I saw it 10 or 15 times.
No, again.
So I'm not calling out the other guys. I just want to be clear, right? I'm just saying that it was like it was so much that you would notice it, right? And Devontae Smith, very quickly, what is so key about this, in my opinion, is he is not getting the opportunities in the passing game that Judy is getting.
I agree.
Ruggs is making the most of his opportunity with one catch. But to Devonta Smith's credit, which is why I'm pointing this out, I wish I had taken the time to count the number of snaps that he got on the field versus the other wide receivers. I would dare say that he probably got within just a couple snaps on the field of Calvin Ridley, the go-to guy, and he didn't have a ball thrown at him.
Right.
He is the epitome of your mini game ball. He basically has said, I have found a way to get on the field. And he was on the field all the time, and the ball was never thrown his way. Right. But he still did his job, which is just awesome.
Well, I think you hit sort of a nail there is – you know, Saban is in a position because these guys are so talented that he can say, look, you're going to do the little things, right? Do the little things right. That's Saban, right? And so you've got these guys that are doing the little things right. And they have such upside potential that, you know, it puts Saban in an easier position to be highly principled on the matter of if you're not willing to block, you're not going to play. Yes. And these guys are out there, you know, throwing the blocks, catching the balls, and you know, especially in the person of Ruggs, scoring touchdowns. And Devonta is putting in sort of the work part of it, and he's not getting the sort of the benefit of it. But that'll come. That will only come as he continues to see the field.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, tell me something that jumped out for you on offense.
You know, I thought. And, you know, and again, you're right. I think there's a pecking order with the running backs. But we did see Brian Robinson in early, and he only had 3 carries, you know, on the game. But he was in much, much earlier, which I thought was interesting. And he came in just for a play or two and then went back and then, you know, and then was sort of back in his regular rotation. But I thought it was interesting to see him in early. And I think that plays to a little bit of – the coaching staff looking at the what does each player do the best, what do they do well, and we want to tailor plays to what they do well and almost have sort of sub packages. And so I think that there was a play call there where we were trying to get you know Brian on the field, and so you know we did, and he was out there with another running back, which we're seeing more of that with the two running backs. I think that's going to be interesting and compelling as we start to see wrinkles there. I thought that was a little interesting. And, you know, we talked about Irv. I just want to call out Tua. And every time he steps on the field, he does something that's pretty darn impressive. And what's interesting is he actually did have a couple called runs, which was a little bit of a surprise, and made some really nice moves with the ball. But his pass to Ruggs, and I swear, I don't think Saban wanted to score that touchdown. I think if we weren't pressed to get a third down, and if Tennessee weren't actually covering the receivers so well, it's almost like their ability worked against them, right? If they hadn't kept us from getting first downs on the ground, and they hadn't covered well enough that it sort of created a helter-skelter type field, then I don't think we're in the market for a 60-yard touchdown there, right? It's just the way the play sort of unfolded, that's what was available. And so Tua on the move through just a beautiful strike to Ruggs, that was fun to see.
No, it was, man. I have to disagree with you a little bit on the intent there.
Okay.
Just because first of all, I think the Tua running is your comment where you say, let's put it on tape. I think they just wanted to show on tape that Tua can do this.
Yes.
But his pass to Ruggs, It was 3rd and 15, and it was at the Alabama 40. And by the way, you know, Brian Robinson got his carries on that drive. And so basically, you know, 1st and 10, 23 yard line, 7 minutes left. Brian, you know, mm-hmm. has a nice 9 yard carry, Dave. And then the very next down, he has 13 yard carry. Mm-hmm. And so now you're sitting here 1st and 10 at the Alabama 45. Well, after Tua loses some yards and Brian gets a 1 yard carry, you got the 3rd and 15. I'm thinking they're just going to, you know, do a draw. They're going to hand the ball off to Brian again, because they've handed the ball off to Brian now 3 of 4 plays. Mm-hmm. And they're at the 40-yard line. And to your point, there's 4 minutes and, 5 minutes left in the game. And to your point, they're up 38-7. And, you know, Saban's – he's happy with that. It's Tennessee. But on that play, when you watch it on TV – and they have that lovely camera in the sky that lets you see behind the quarterback like you're the quarterback, it makes me dispute kind of that comment, because we kept 7 guys in the block. We only sent 3 guys into the pass pattern. They only sent 4 guys to rush the quarterback. So we had 7 guys to block 4.
Right.
And we gave Tua all day. By design, we wouldn't have sent 7 guys in there if we were not trying to give, you know, make certain nobody hit him, right? And it's 3rd and 15, so you need a longer time in the pocket for the play to develop. Well, then when you watch it on tape, you see that the Tennessee guys was in a zone, and they had 7 guys drop, man. They had 7 guys dropped, but they underestimated the athleticism of Ruggs. Because Ruggs was on the far right. He basically had faked out to the right sideline, and he starts cutting across the field, and the Tennessee guys don't even really know where he is. A safety behind him in a 2-deep look sees him, and he starts running to take an angle to try to get there, but because he's 40 pounds heavier, he just barely gets there late. And Ruggs, you know, and the ball's thrown perfectly where it needs to be. And so my point is I literally think it was, hey, let's see what the kid can do. It's another situation. It's 3rd and 15. It's Tennessee. We're gonna leave a lot of guys in to protect you. We're going to put these 3 freshmen in the pass patterns and see what they can do. And we're going to see if somebody can get a first down on 3rd and 15 against Tennessee.
Well, of course we're trying to – no, of course we're trying to get the first down. We weren't trying to score a 60-yard touchdown. And Tua threw the ball on the move. And so – That was a long developing play. That play went, you know, helter skelter because it was so long developing. It wasn't a 5-step drop, throw the ball out, get the first down. That was sit in the pocket. The pocket starting to collapse. Let's roll. Let's roll out. And it looked like he was going to run because he was approaching the line of scrimmage and he saw, you know, Ruggs break free. And that's when he threw the ball. So no, I think we would have happily gotten the first down and then run the ball for the next 3 plays. And Saban would have been happy as a lark to take a knee with the clock running out on the 2-yard line. I think that's really more my point.
I think that in that situation, you don't throw the ball where he threw it if you weren't trying to make a big play. That's all. I think that
it was a helter skelter field. That wasn't a designed rollout, throw the, you know, get the ball out. That wasn't a 5-step drop, pop the ball out. That was sit in the pocket, roll out because I'm starting to get a little bit of pressure, and then throw the ball when it's at that point a broken field.
Okay, I don't think he had that much pressure. My recollection is he was sitting in the pocket and he was pretty comfortable because he had 7 guys blocking. And when you look at the 7 guys that dropped back in the pass in the coverage, they had the field blanketed, and they were kind of evenly distributed in the secondary. It was just a great play by Ruggs. I mean, my point is. 3 receivers running a pass pattern with 7 guys dropping, three, somebody shouldn't get open with three guys in the pass pattern with seven guys covering.
Sure. Oh, I agree.
And so I just think that if you're trying to let Tua get the first down, which surprised me, you do a different pass route than the one they called. You do a sideline pass, you know, you run past the first down marker and you come back to the sideline or something. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. There's a safer pass you could have thrown to try to get third and 15. It seemed to me like they were taking a shot because it was a difficult – there's safer calls on third and 15 to try to get a first down than the one that they called. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. So yeah, it just kind of surprised me.
I don't – you know, it's hard to know what route they were running originally because, you know, again, it sort of would have helter-skelter. But
right.
But,
What did you think about, interestingly enough, you know, Najee comes in with Tua, and when Najee came in, you know, he literally, you know, had several, you know, plays in a row called for him, like four or five in a row. It was just interesting. They were like, okay, it's his time now, and then they just kept feeding the ball over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think they were trying to, you know, Saban has said that he'll stick with the hot hand, and it was almost like we're trying to get Najee the hot hand. Let's get him a touchdown against these guys. Let's get him, you know, some big plays. Let's sort of feed that. And he had some nice runs. There was, you know, one or two that I thought he was close to breaking. I think we wanted him to break one is what I really think. And I thought, you know, and he comes in and like we've talked about, he's as talented as the starters are. He just doesn't have, you know, the experience. And so he's still a top flight running back. I thought it was neat to see Tua in there, like at the controls of the, you know, the starting lineup. I like to see him get that experience.
Well, it was interesting, right, that you know, Jalen comes in to start the second half, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saban's not happy with the, you know, what had happened in the first half. He wants to get a rhythm. Jalen comes in. They go 76 yards. They score. He's done for the day, right? I mean,
yeah.
Once again, what we're seeing, you know, the starting quarterbacks coming out of the game with, you know, 2 minutes left, 2 minutes into the third quarter, you know, we would have shouted for this 10 years ago, right, to get this much work to the backup. So to your point, when Tua comes in, Najee runs the first time. And then I found it very interesting, the next two plays, they throw the ball to Najee. It was almost like they were trying to either A, see what we can work in for you later in the season. It was like an audition. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, let's run you right, run you left, and pass to you in the flats here and pass to you there and see what you can do, you know, so we can kind of, you know, figure it out for next time, which was interesting. I want to mention Tua's interception real quick. Because sure. we do call it straight here. A couple different things. That was totally his fault.
Yep.
Irv Smith was wide open in the flats there at the goal line. Tua should have just thrown the ball to him. He purposely held the ball to get the ball to Ridley. Why, I don't know. Irv was wide open, and he just should have hit him. It would have been an easy touchdown. And instead, he just kept his eyes on Calvin, allowed the middle linebacker to watch his eyes and make the play. And so that was frustrating.
Well, it was.
Frustrating is the wrong word, David, but it's just, you know, that there's my 52-0 right there.
it quite likely is. I think that as much as I wish it had not happened, I think that touchdown and that interception was worth more to us than it was to Tennessee.
Yes.
And as much as Tennessee didn't want to get blown out, and as much as, you know, they got to sort of bask in that big play, I think what Tua gained from that experience is worth more than, you know, sort of the fleeting joy that Tennessee got from it. And look, I never root against our guys, and I'm never rooting for the team, for our opponent to have success. Some of these lessons you wish, you know, won't they just learn during the week in practice? But some of these lessons that they learn on – that the players learn on the field like this, you know, having made a mistake, those are the ones that they carry with them. And that's the play for all of the positive plays that we can call out on Tua, this is the one that he thinks about when he lays down and goes to bed at night, right? And I'm not rooting him for him to have like bad things to think about, but this, that is the play that will make him better. And yes. I always, you know, my favorite example of that is Dee Milliner and giving up, you know, he just got scorched against Arkansas for, you know, a big touchdown. Well, he came back and was an All-America. And I'm to this day convinced that he spent a lot of time thinking about that Arkansas play. And he spent a lot of time, you know, dedicating himself to not letting that happen again. And it's that, it was the bad play that allowed him to be a good player. And I, you know, I think Tua is going to have a very similar experience. I think we'll replace my example with Tua's, you know, INT against Tennessee.
Were you surprised that he didn't get laid into on the sideline the way we would, you know, we saw an AJ McCarron type of deal? I was surprised that he really, you know, I just was surprised the cameras kind of zoomed in as he went to the sideline. And you know how Saban is about ball control and protecting the ball. I guess it's no different than last year with Jalen, because Jalen, you know, Jalen had some careless plays and he didn't really get chewed out either. So either Saban's getting softer in his old years, or, you know, he's just handling the situation differently than he would have years ago.
I think it's more of the latter. I think Saban is, and it seems like there's been some interviews and he's talked about this, you know, maybe it was in the off season, but that, you know, as he has evolved and developed as a coach, and I think he still consciously looks for opportunities to improve himself and how he leads and coaches the team. I think that he has an understanding or appreciation that different players in different circumstances need to be coached differently. And I don't know that earlier in his career, he would have sort of bought into that, but I think he does now. And I say I think he does because I've heard him say it. That's sort of his approach. And so I think he looks at, I've got a true freshman here that I can break his spirit, or I can pat him on the back and say, you know, we need to work on this. But I don't do it in a way that's belittling. I don't do it in a way that maybe he might struggle with. And I'm not calling to a, you know, not mentally strong, but I just think, you know, different strokes for different folks, different circumstances, you know, call for different things. And I think coach is trying to coach the individual rather than just everyone like they're the same.
I got you. All right. What else jumps out at you on offense? I know Ronnie Clark even got into the action. What else jumped out at you that you wanted to comment about?
You know, I love seeing Ronnie Clark get into the game. That's always a good sign, right?
Right.
If Bama's had a good day when Ronnie Clark steps in.
Right.
So I like to see that. I was hoping that he would, you know, score a touchdown. That didn't happen. I like seeing just a big jumbo package. A couple of times when Bo scored and went over the top, we made no pretense of doing anything, you know, but, you know, powering the football. And, you know, brought in, you know, Quinnen from defense, brought in Deron Payne from defense, brought in, you know, Jedrick Wills. You know, there were no receivers on the field. It was all, you know, tight end, running back, or, you know, or extra linemen, defensive linemen, you know, sort of playing fullbacks. I thought that was really fun to see. And Tom, what do you think? Are we going to see a naked bootleg out of that formation at some point?
Oh, I think we could, man. I'm glad you mentioned this, because I will say on Bo's first touchdown that Quinnen Williams did not kick out the guy to the right that should have been his block.
Mm-hmm.
He blocked down and the guy grabbed Bo's legs. You know, he flew around and grabbed him by the legs. And when Quinnen came in on the next, you know, when Quinnen came in on the very next jumbo package, this time he kicked the guy out to the right, and he blocked the guy, and it allowed Bo to be able to get a push off the, you know, off the field and be able to get up higher in the air. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a neat little nuance that on two little plays, one play he didn't block the right guy, the very next play he did.
He did, yeah.
So that was good to see. But I do think that we could see the naked bootleg. in that situation, I'd be okay with it, right? Because the game's on the line. You're going to pull that out of your, you know, bag of tricks in a tight game. And he's going to be wide open and no one's going to be within 5 yards from him. So you don't have to worry about him getting hurt.
Right. No, I think that'll be fun to see. I think that's something we'll definitely have to watch for. You know, I think we used pace and tempo well. You know, we scored the early touchdown. I think at 3 punts in a row. And then we went to a little bit of a faster pace offense and had some great success there. Put, you know, 2 more quick scores up before half. So, again, I like us using all the levers and knobs and buttons on the offensive control panel. I really like to see what Dayball's doing and not just, you know, hey, what's he gotten, you know, sort of the first 15 play scripts, but how does he adjust and evolve the offense through the course of the game? I think that's fun to watch. Not that I like to see a struggle, but I think it's fun to watch. And it bodes well for the balance of the season.
Oh, it does, man. And at one point, you know, we only had 1 3-play drive. We only had 1 3-and-out the whole day. And at one point, you know, they were talking on the TV broadcast, you know, about, you know, Alabama had run 70 plays and Tennessee had run 30. And it was, you know, it was in the third quarter, and it must have been after Jalen took the team down the field to score. No, I beg your pardon. It was after Tua's long drive that ended with the interception. At that point, Tennessee had only had the ball for 3 plays in the whole second half.
Right.
And, you know, you just couldn't script it any better.
Right.
As far as that goes. Well, my mini game ball obviously goes to Devonta Smith for the reasons I laid out earlier. So give me yours. Who do you want to give one to?
You know, I've got 2 guys kind of circled here. I'm going to go Jerry Jeudy. You know, he had 3 catches. They all went for first downs on scoring drives. I think he is emerging more and more into that lead receiver role, and that's sort of fun to watch.
All right, I gotta tell you real quick as you say that, right?
Yeah.
For the non-Alabama fans, okay, if you were watching that game on Saturday with a couple of his catches, and you told the non-Bama fan, and he said, hey, what number is Calvin Ridley? And you told him or her Calvin Ridley was number 4, they would believe you.
Yes.
There was a couple catches he made, man, that it looked just exactly like Calvin Ridley. And that's just really scary. That's not scary for us. It's scary for our opponents. But
no, this home stretch, I think we're going to see more and more of him, you know, nestled into the game plan and really see the, you know, these premier talents really sort of play off one another. I think that's going to be exciting.
Well, I think what they should start doing is they should just trade jerseys at the start of the game, but, you know, in the locker room, just trade the 3 and the 4. And just screw with like half the fans in the stadium. I think that'd be hilarious.
I don't know what to do with that. let's flip the field on that one.
All right. So, you know, defensively, you know, I guess for me, just, you know, I first want to just call out Bugs, just, you know, just because of, I mean, he led the stat sheet. I mean, you know, everybody saw the stats, you know, 9 tackles on the day. You know, once again, Saban scores with a JUCO transfer, and you know, at one time he got banged up, and, you know, Anthony Jennings came over and asked him if he was okay. He obviously had taken a shot. You know, he sat there on his knee for a second. He got up. He hustled off the field. He was in the very next series. He's going to be one of these guys where you always talk about every year we have to have a certain – there has to be key players – that get inserted into this cog of talented depth. And this is a guy that nobody knew about last year. But right this second, you would have to say he's in a handful of guys that without him, this is a very different football team.
Oh, yeah. You know, we talked about, do we have the depth on the defensive front that we had last year? And that was a big question mark. And two of the greatest, you know, contributors to answering that question are, you know, and Isaiah Bugs is at the top of the list, right? Because he wasn't on the team last year, and so you don't know what you got here. And in Raekwon, who also had a strong day, you know, he only played sparingly last year, and so you didn't know what he was going to be this year. And both of these guys continue every week, get better and better. And I'll say this about Bugs, I agree. He led the team in tackles. It's not the first time he's done that. But was it A&M where he was very, very active and he just jumped off the screen that he was the dominant, defensive lineman? On Saturday against Tennessee, he was equally as productive, but he didn't pop in the same way. And I don't mean that as a negative. I actually mean that as a positive, that he is just going to work. And at the end of the day, look at his totals, he's going to stack up against anybody. And it may not be as flashy week to week because it's a defensive lineman position. It's not always going to be. But it doesn't prevent him or preclude him from being productive. And that makes him an especially fun player to watch.
No, it does. But what is so key and critical right now for his role on this team is we are going to a look a lot of times of two down linemen.
Yes.
Just two defensive linemen with their hands in the dirt. And Saban currently has the comfort level that you will see Deron Payne not on the field as one of those two guys. And so my point is that Deron's getting a little, he's getting a little lighter load, and you'll see Bugs in there with Raekwon Davis, or you'll see Bugs in there with one of the younger guys, or you'll see Bugs in there with Frazier or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you'll see Deron Payne with a LeBryan Ray. So my point is right now you always see one of those two guys in there, Payne or Bugs, and that just speaks to the comfort level they have with Bugs.
It really does. And it also speaks that we're comfortable sort of rotating. So we don't have to always feel like we have to have our best three in there all the time. And we can't do anything without those three in there because we've rotated, we've developed, some depth. And LeBryan Ray's another guy. I wrote his name down because, we asked the question and, we gave our perspective in terms of an answer, but we asked the question a couple of weeks ago, hey, we stripped off his red shirt. Are we going to get our value for this? And man, it looks like we are. And so I'm fun. I always say this, it's fun to watch that, but I'm very pleased to see that as well.
Oh no, absolutely. I will tell you, you just made a critical point when you were talking about not having to have our three best guys out there. Last year on a team that had, more depth, we would say than this year's team, I don't think that was the case. We consistently, right, had a lot of snaps to a couple key guys on defensive line.
Right.
I mean, it goes back to what we talked about with the running backs this year and the wide receivers this year and the linebacker core. And I mean, it's just interesting that we are comfortable. It shows the development that's being done in practice, or either it just shows the talent level of these guys. Because I guess what I'm saying is last year we wouldn't have seen a LeBryan Ray in the game. Last year we would have seen, the Dalvin Tomlinson, and we would have seen the Jonathan Allen, and we'd have seen one more guy. But I don't think we'd have seen Ray last year if he was a true freshman. But yet we're seeing him this year. It's just interesting.
Well, it is. And Raekwon's a good sort of proxy for that because he didn't play a lot last year. And over the course of the season, he probably played more last year than, LeBryan has now. But, let's check back at that at the end of the year. And I think the play count will be surprisingly similar. But Brian will have done that in more of a compact time frame, which means, he's developing and being trusted with, a larger capacity. So,
no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let me ask you about one other thing. It also seems in this game for the first time, we have more of a comfort level sending Levi Wallace on a blitz than we have before. You know, we've been typically just seeing Minka from the, you know, from the star position, but Levi obviously, you know, got him two sacks in the game, and that was because of the opportunities of sending him at the very last minute from the short side of the field, which is obviously a shorter distance to the quarterback. We have not seen that all season like we saw in this ball game.
No, and I love, you know, I mean, Levi Wallace is such a phenomenal story. I love the fact that you know, we were able to use him in that way. I do think there's something to putting stuff on film, but I think that also that it was an unexpected source of pressure. And if you think about, you know, Tennessee playing a young, inexperienced quarterback, and to get pressure from somewhere that Alabama's not demonstrated it. We have seen Minka blitz, and we've seen
from the wide side of the field.
Yeah. And we've seen, you know, secondary blitzes, but it's never been Levi. You can count on it not being Levi, except for two sacks. It is Levi.
Well, it goes like what we were talking about with the tight end across in the hash on offense.
Right.
You're pulling something yet again, right? It's like, don't you have everything on film that you're going to put on film, and then they put something else on film?
Right. Well, look, let's call it out, right? Remember when we did the A&M show, right? We were very complimentary of the A&M coaches for picking things out. Well, I mean, I don't want to toot our own horn, but did we not just do the same thing?
Well, we did, but as you like to say, to put a bow on something, what makes that work for Levi Wallace, and by the way, he would be right in the number one wide receiver's face at the line of scrimmage, and at the very last second, he took off.
Right.
Very hard to pick up. The only reason that worked in this ball game is because you have a beast at safety named Ronnie Harrison.
Yes.
Who at the very last second can shade over and get in front of the number one wide receiver for the other team. And you're comfortable because you say, okay, I've got Levi going from the short side of the field. He's going to get to the quarterback quicker. Ronnie Harrison doesn't have to cover the number wide receiver 30 yards down the field because it's not going to take that long for Levi to get to the quarterback.
Right.
Ronnie can be physical, right? He can man him in those first 5 yards, and he can just basically take him where he wants to take him. It's just such a smart design. But it only works because you've got a freak of a safety who you are comfortable putting on the number one wide receiver for the 3 seconds until Levi gets to the quarterback.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. If you did not have a strong cover corner or a strong, you know, cover safety, then you couldn't do it. I wouldn't do that with Hootie. I wouldn't do that with Hootie. I wouldn't do that. You know, we've had other safeties that I wouldn't do that with. But Ronnie is – which is amazing because he has a reputation as being a thumper, which he is, but he is sneaky good in coverage.
There were several times in this game that he had to get matched up at the very last minute against Callaway, and you know, Callaway only had 3 catches on the ball on the day, and so even when they had the matchups that they wanted, because of the scheme, they, you know, they weren't able to do anything about it. So I just thought that was interesting.
No, you're spot on. And you know, it's like you called out, you know, A&M tried to match, you know, Kirk against them. And right. That didn't work out as well as it would, as you would think it would on paper. And that's just a testament to Ronnie. And poor guy can't earn a mini game ball. I don't know. Maybe we got one for him today, but I mean, those are contrary, you know, talk about contributions that are being made that people don't see.
Yes.
That's
people don't see that. People don't see that, man.
Right.
Well, talk to me about Mac's interception. I just want to point it out just because it was a very athletic play. I mean, obviously the ball was thrown right at him, and a lot of people drop the balls that are thrown right at them.
Right.
And I just love his hands. I mean, I just love this guy. I mean, there's a reason this guy got some time at fullback last year. It doesn't surprise me what he's doing, but just very athletic play.
just phenomenal. And he made an athletic, you know, interception last week that we talked about. And then, you know, to come in and make this one on Saturday. So that's 2 weeks in a row that he's made very athletic interceptions. And this one bailed out the punt fumble. And so there's something about there, to me, there's a little something extra in making a big play in that type of circumstance where you're really bailing a teammate out, really bailing the team out, if you will. I get a kick out of those types of plays and doing it in those types of circumstances. Yeah, I'm all about some Mike Wilson.
Well, and, you know, it comes at Keith's expense, right? Because if you're going to make those kind of plays, you're going to get more opportunities. You know, Keith's still getting his, but you're going to get more opportunities in that third down package when, you know, you've got now three picks on the year.
Yeah, Mac, and yeah, you will. And Max, and, you know, be increasingly hard to keep off the field. You know, there was a day where you might say, well, he's still learning the playbook. And that day goes away. And because the reality is his athleticism has always been more. And so when the day goes away that he doesn't know the playbook or is still learning the playbook, then watch out, right? Because he's going to get all the playing time he can handle.
No, absolutely. Well, anything else added to you on the defensive side of the ball?
We talk about a lot of guys, and Anthony Jennings is just a stat sheet stuffer. Just three quick hitters, right? We talked Jennings there. You were spot on. Jamie Mosley, I was watching him, you know, has earned that starting role in the Rabbit Rusher. That was fun to see. And what do you think? Vandarius Cowan, we burned his red shirt on Saturday. I have to say I was a little bit surprised.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that one. What do you think was – I mean, I understand, you know, if you feel like you need to get people on the field, you need to get them on the field. But, you know, I didn't see that one just given the current situation of the depth that we have in front of him. You know, why do you think that one?
I don't know. That one surprises me so much more than any of the others. Major Tennyson hasn't played a whole lot, but we stripped his red shirt, and the other tight end, Kedrick James, you know, we did the same thing. And you think, well, it's because we lost, a tight end for the season. And so we had to see who could Miller Forstall. And so we had to see who could come in and man the position. That makes sense. We take LeBron Ray's off early, later into the season, but it's because Deshaun Hand went down. And so there was sort of a tit for tat on that. And you think, well, we've gotten past where we had five linebackers out and we've got guys coming back. And so you feel like we're pretty flush at linebacker. You don't need to take anybody's red shirt off. And then we did. So,
well, and to your point, we did it at the expense of when we brought in, you know, the twos to run, we brought him in with Chris Allen. And so he came in, at the same time Chris Allen did. And Dave, we didn't really see much of Joshua McMillan or Mika Brown. And so you wonder why not them?
Yeah, I don't know, right? Because they have all played and you thought, you know, Josh McMillan was sort of earning a role and Mekhi hasn't played a lot in a couple of weeks. And you think, well, that's because, you know, we've gotten guys back and we haven't needed them. And so you think, and you know, the answer is there has to be a lot going on in practice that we're not seeing, because if he wasn't ready, he wouldn't be out there. And if he weren't practicing at a level that, you know, maybe was starting to put him ahead of some, you know, sometimes things just when they click. And so maybe they just started to click for this guy. And, you know, like we just talked about with Mac. And so maybe when that light goes on, you can't keep him off the field. And so this will be a very interesting one to watch, because to me, this feels more like a D-liner situation than the LeBryan Ray did. So this is one I think we need to keep a close eye on.
Well, I think LeBryan Ray is a different animal because he is taking snaps away from Quinnen Williams. Right?
Well, my point is he
got more snaps in the game than Williams did, and so and nothing against Williams, but Brian's getting eight to ten snaps a game.
No, he is. And I don't know that Quinnen was or sort of is at that point. And what we needed is someone to be a sponge and soak up some of the snaps that Deshaun Hand was getting. And so you can sit there and in a coaching staff meeting and say, Quinnen's not ready to get that jump from 3 to 9. What a snap, whatever the conversation is, right? But LeBryan can come in and they can both get 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, that kind of deal. And then LeBryan has proven that, you know, maybe he can, you know, even assume more than that. But you can connect. There's a connective tissue that you connect that you can draw back to. There's an immediate need. An immediate need is Deshaun Hand's not available. And we don't know. And then, like I said, in the moment when he got hurt, you didn't know if he was not going to be back for the season. And it turns out he's going to play, you know, when we take on LSU. But in the moment, you didn't know. And so it's got to be next guy up now. It's on the job. Are you ready to do this? And that made perfect sense. There's not that smoking gun, if you will, on Vandarius.
What is your take on the Dylan Moses situation as it relates to that same conversation?
Well, I'd say, isn't that interesting, right? Because we've seen less of him, and it makes you wonder what's going on there. And it's like who's on first, right? I just want to go back and you know, makes you wonder about, you know, Ben as well.
I started to say, by the way, so in practice today, right, with the inside linebackers, so Rashawn Evans led the group, followed by Sean Dion Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
and then Keith Holcomb, and then Dylan Moses, and then Benton, and then Ben Davis was going through the drills during the media time with the inside linebackers. Behind Benton was Ben Davis.
Yeah. So well down the list, right?
And back to your Cowan comment. Cowan, it was Jennings, Mosley, Mika Brown, Joshua McMillan, Christopher Allen, and then Cowan.
Yeah.
So Cowan's running behind Brown and McMillan in the drills, and Brown and McMillan didn't see the field.
Yeah. So I don't know, right? And so it just feels like LeBryan Ray felt natural because, you know, I mean, like literally you saw what happened and you recognize, hey, there's a need here. We need to figure out how we plug it. LeBryan Ray. There just didn't seem that same level of obviousness between, you know, behind bringing in Vandarius. And I'm not mad at the guy, and I hope he's great. I just, as somebody from the stands watching, I don't understand it. But that doesn't mean it's not the right move. It's just I don't understand it. And so because I don't understand it, it feels more like the D-liner thing. I didn't understand that. And then he played, what, 3 snaps and didn't play again? And interesting, Lynn, am I just nuts or was that the Tennessee game as well?
Right. Well, I will make a prediction here that because of the opportunity in the bye week and having the extra practice time, I think we will have a Ben Davis sighting after the bye.
Okay.
I think we will see him on the field folded into things here, you know, at the end of the season. We will see him pop up in some special team situation later this season.
All right. I don't know where you're getting your information, but
tell me who gets your mini game ball.
I'm going back to the well, same as last week. Deontay Thompson gets mine. Oh, you know,
come on. Really?
Yeah, he had 3 tackles, but he came in and was a sticker. And there was one
the same guys while I'm saying that. Nothing against Deontay, but you can't.
No, I understand. There was one thing that just you know, there was one series that really just stood out to me. And on back-to-back plays, he was playing at the single high safety. It was two high safety. On back-to-back plays from a two high safety position, he made the tackle at the line of scrimmage. And on one play, it was a run to the right, and the next play was a play to the left. And so from a two high safety position on consecutive plays, he made tackles at the line of scrimmage, and it was to both sides of the line. That I thought was very impressive. And so I don't know if it's a mini game ball because that was a sort of a subtle thing that sort of contributed to the win, or if that is just me doubling down on my futures position on Deontay Thompson.
I got you. Well, I'm going to give the love to Mosley. You touched on it earlier, but this guy he was in the game, you know, in key moments with the ones, just like key short yardage situations, like when they have a host of other people that they could put as the one of the two linebackers on the edge. It was Jennings on one side and him on the other. And, you know, with guys like Ben Davis and Mack Wilson and Dylan Moses and all these five-star guys, just kudos to CJ's little brother, man. Just a cool story like Levi Wallace.
No, there were years. I mean, because he's been around a while, right? You know, I love Rodney Orr and the Tighter Insider, and I love sort of their preseason. Every day they've got a dozen pictures or more, 20 pictures of, you know, practices and all that. And Jamie Mosley seemed to always sort of be a favorite of that photo session. And I always thought, God bless Jamie Mosley and you know, the fact that he's having a chance to play. And it was always like one day he's going to see the field. And I thought, man, this Spindley linebacker, I mean, God bless him. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, here we are these years later, and he is contributing and has earned, you know, in a sub package on defense, he's earned a starting position. And I think there's a message there for, you know, not just the players on the team, but there's a message there for all of us. You know, if you have a dream, sort of stick with it and continue to work hard and do what you got to do. And, you know, one day, right. And so, you know, Levi Wallace and Mosley and Anthony Avery, there's a handful of these guys. You think about Alabama and the recruiting machine and the Saban sort of whatever Death Star, but it's real, right? There are real opportunities for people that have come in and will work hard and bust their ass. And even from a walk-on position, we've got now two of them on defense that are, at least in sub packages, have starting positions. And if you were to poll Alabama fans, they would not buy into that.
They would think you were full of crap. Yes. Yes. Well, hey, talk to me about some special teams, man. Did Saban get a lot of sleep Saturday night when he tried his third punt returner and he fumbles too?
Man, we predicted it just like right, but wrong. We predicted that we would see three punt returners in the game. We didn't predict that we would see the third punt returner all game.
But man, I mean, like, and when he fumbled, he left him out there. I guess he was like, well, gosh, I can't bring one of the other two guys back in, so I'm just going to leave you out there. But, I mean, you know he's got to just be freaking pulling his hair out, man. It's about time for an audition on the quad.
Yeah, I think they're going to settle this over the bye. My prediction is I think we're back to Trayvon. And this problem is done. That's my prediction. It's sort of solved for this last stretch of the season. Because, you know, next up, when you think of who have we worked at that position, next up really is Minka.
I started to say, I should have interrupted you sooner. That was going to be my other prediction. We could see a Minka after the bye.
I don't think we do.
But we could. It would be very Saban-like the way Eddie Jackson got brought back into this. And look what Eddie Jackson did. We could absolutely see him say, okay, I'm done with this. We're in week nine. I'm not going to lose a game, a tight game based on a fumble. Just put Minka's butt back there. We know he'll catch the ball. He'll do what I tell him to do. Done. I could absolutely, that could be a coin toss 50-50 that could happen.
As much as I agree that Eddie Jackson is the example here, I think Eddie Jackson's the example the other way too. How much could we have used Eddie Jackson against Clemson, right?
Yes.
If he had not been back there sort of freelance, you know, sort of moonlighting
as an
all-conference punt returner, we would have had him available to us in the secondary. And wouldn't, at the end of the day, we much have preferred that.
Sure, we'd have won the game if Eddie would have been there.
Yeah,
sure.
And so you think about a Minka, and look, I am on record being a big fan of Eddie Jackson, but Minka's contribution to the secondary is more than Eddie Jackson's one.
Sure. Oh, we can't afford to lose him right now. Right. I'm just saying it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation right now. You've tried three of them.
Now, I will say this.
The only reason you can be patient is because you've been, you know, throttling people and you've been able to get through it.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this. If we find ourselves in a tight game and it's, you know, midway through the third quarter.
Oh, and it's actually a one-score game?
Or it's Auburn, yeah. Or it's, you know, Georgia in the SEC championship game, you know, sort of projecting out a little bit. We find ourselves in a tight game. The bets are off. We might put him back there.
And make him fair catch. And make him fair catch it, right? Make him fair catch it.
Well, you know, man, I can't tell you how nervous I'm going to be if we see him back there, because he means so much, you know, in the secondary. But stuff like, you know, you can get injured at any time, and I understand that. And so you can't play not to get injured. But at the same time, you know.
No, that's a great point, man. It's 14-7, start of the fourth quarter against Georgia. I could see him back there, and he'd just say, fair catch the damn ball. Don't even think about it. Fair catch it.
Yeah, possesses the ball.
Anything else on special teams?
Yeah, I mean, I want Trayvon or Ruggs to get it sorted out. And I have nothing against Trayvon. There's just part of me that just thinks it's going to end up being Ruggs, you know, at some point, maybe next season. But I think we get it sorted out with those two guys. And that's who we ride with the rest of the way.
All right. So JK had his two punts, filled up the stat sheet though, because one of them went for 50 yards. You know, on his kickoffs, he was more times than not dropping the ball at the half yard line, so we wouldn't give him a free 25 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Making him return the ball, which was nice. What else jumped out at you on special teams?
No, I think, you know, I think it was fun to see that, because we talked about that, it was last week, the week before, about using that as an opportunity to sort of squeeze out a little bit of extra bit of margin and make your opponent, you know, have to take a little bit longer field. So I continue to like seeing that. You know, it was a short kick that Andy hit, but he hit it and he hit another one. And I have seen a couple outlets talk about I heard someone specifically say that he's having a Jeremy Shelley senior-like season, where he, you know, has been sort of, you know, sort of bemoaned and then goes on and has a really good season. And I've read somewhere else where they predicted that, you know, if Andy doesn't watch out, he's going to play himself into an all-conference kicker position, and I thought that was pretty good. And he doesn't kick the long ones, and so his stats are a little bit impacted by this. But his percentage, accuracy percentage, is higher than Auburn's Carlson, and I think I was probably surprised to hear that. I was probably most surprised to hear that. But I mean, I don't know. We probably don't want to run around and talk about this because it'll jinx us. But you know, dude's kicking pretty well.
Well, you know, dude made 3 of 5 field goals in a tight Florida State game and just unfortunately missed his 2 from 40 to 50 yards. But since that time, he's hit 3 of 4 between 40 and 50 yards.
Right.
The dude's been automatic under 39 yards, you know, 40 yards and in, he's been automatic.
Right.
So to your point, 13 of 16, you know, there's been many of years we were calling for auditions that we would have taken that. And so to be able to bring him in right now, when we need that, we need someone with veteran experience to come in and get the job done. There was other guys we expected to be the guy right now. He's not who we would have called to be the guy right now on this roster. But right now, he's another one of those handful of guys like Bugs that, you know,
yeah,
we might need him later in the season to make something important happen.
Yeah, and so the fact that he's, you know, making the kicks and building confidence, we will absolutely take that all day long. We talked about early in the season, there needs to be, you know, there needs to be a yard marker beyond, you know, where we know at that point we have points. And at that point we're playing with house money. Are we going to get the 3 or are we going to get the 7? But you know, we know we've got sort of points in the bank. And early, that would have been very close, right? That would have been and so we sort of relaxed what that can be. And it's probably about where we would want it to be now, which is good. I think that's great. And, but we didn't know early in the season if we would be at this position. So I think we have to be pleased with that.
Oh yeah. And to go get him late, like they did. Right. I mean, that was huge.
Yeah.
And now it gives your, you know, now it gives your freshman who does have, you know, comes in with a lot of pub, you know, it gives him a chance to, you know, work his way into this team in the future, which is a big deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, next up, you know, Tommy's the bye, and, you know, it's always the most cliche thing that I say, but we got to win the bye week, and that's not getting anybody in trouble. We have less of a concern with that, I think, than we have in years past, but you never know. Right. And so I don't want to read Sunday morning's, you know, mail and, you know, find out that somebody got popped. So I think we need some good behavior on the team. Let's not beat ourselves. Good, you know, productive and safe, you know, weeks of practice. But, you know, Tom, then we got LSU coming. And, you know, they've won 3 in a row. They're sort of feeling their oats. What you know, if you kind of look around the corner, what do you think about the LSU game?
You know, LSU's got talent, right? I mean, these guys, you know, most of these guys are homegrown. And, you know, one of the top states in the country recruiting-wise. And I think despite Ed Orgeron, this team has turned it around just due to the pure talent that they have up and down their roster. And the pride factor of, you know, this was not LSU football. And so I think they're kind of on autopilot right now. They're kind of driving themselves right now, to be fair. And also you've got two good coordinators with a lot of experience, and maybe Ed Orgeron is just staying out of the way and letting the offensive coordinators do what they do. And so, you know, I'm glad this game is at home this year with the momentum that they have behind them right this second. I'm really, really, really glad we're not going to Death Valley at night for this football game.
Yeah, I am too. And I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere, you know, at night in Tuscaloosa. I agree. I think they've got, you know, I would love to be sort of a fly in the wall of their football complex over the last, you know, several weeks, right? How have things really changed? Because they seem to be in significant disarray, and they've turned it around. And so what really has contributed to that? I agree. They've got some really talented, you know, coordinators. And it's interesting. It would be interesting to really know the story of what's happening there. I think they are dangerous, and they are as talented probably as anyone, you know, sort of top to bottom of their roster, probably is as talented as anyone will face. And so I completely agree with that. I think they've got a phenomenal running game, and they've had that before, and we've been able, you know, to shut that down. I think Geis is not as talented as Fournette, even though he's coming off just a monster performance against Ole Miss. It's Ole Miss. I have a hard time thinking that the Alabama defense is going to struggle with Danny Etling. And I hate to sort of call someone out in that way, but I've seen them play a couple times this year. I'm not impressed. And I just have a hard time thinking that the Alabama defense is going to struggle with that. And we always do well against the LSU running game. And so with a quarterback that doesn't scare us, I think we are poised to stop their running game. I think their defense is going to give us trouble, and so we may struggle to score. And I say that sort of in a relative way. We've been scoring, 50 points. We don't do that, but we continue to sort of work the ball around, make ourselves tough to defend, and 24-10, something like that. Maybe we look human, but I think 24-27-10 is about what I would think here.
Well, going back to my comment about glad it's in Tuscaloosa this year, I went back and looked at the schedule just going back to when Saban got here. And if you take out the year 2011, where it was the lovely, boring night. Well, I won't say boring. We enjoyed it.
But that was awesome.
When you take out that 9-6, overtime game in Bryant Denny, going back since Saban has been here, we have consistently beaten them by about 20 points in Tuscaloosa. And the last four times LSU's had us at home, it's been 3 points, 4 points, 7 points, and 10 points.
Right.
And so there is a definite 20-point swing having them in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Except for the one anomaly of 2011. So I'm going to be a little more generous than you because he doesn't scare me. He's not a dual threat quarterback, in my opinion. Obviously by any stretch of the imagination, and they don't have, and just the versatility that we have that we've discussed on our defense is gonna, and our guys being fresh and, having Deron Payne,
sure,
having all these guys more healthy now than they would have been a year ago against LSU, it's gonna be like a 31-10 game.
Okay.
And we're gonna kind of fit the mantra of what we've done for the past four or five games at home against them. It'll be close early, and then we'll kind of put it away at the end of the game.
I certainly hope you're right. I like your score better than mine. I think you would agree that the separation that we get is in the second half.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This could be a 14-10 game at halftime, and everybody has just got their hands sitting on their hands.
Yeah, I agree with that. A lot of nervous energy, and then we'll see sort of an explosive play, and I think the crowd goes nuts.
No, I agree. Anything else you got for us for the show?
I've got one more thing. I like the sort of ego indulgent listener call outs, and so we got another one. I want to share and just again expression of gratitude and appreciation for people tuning in and following us. And not being shy about letting us know and leaving a comment on the iTunes. So another 5-star best Alabama football podcast. This is Ross Gaskin. I wanted something that gave me a more in-depth analysis of Alabama football, and I couldn't have found a better podcast for it. They both really know their stuff and have great insights. It's made the game more fun to watch, and especially in garbage time, as I know more things to look for, definitely recommend to any Alabama or college football fans. So that's an awesome comment. Really, really greatly appreciate it. And thanks, Ross. And, others out there, we appreciate these. They help us in the rankings. And sometimes it just feels nice to hear people say nice things.
Well, man, to your point, it helps other people find us.
Yes.
And that's the big thing is it really helps other people find us on iTunes and get a chance to listen and see if they like us. And so we just very much appreciate the feedback.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ross. Thanks, everyone else who has comments. And if you want to get your comment read, on the show and some shout out acknowledgement, then head over to iTunes and drop us an acknowledgement. If you're not on the iTunes, drop us an email, or we've got a Facebook page. You can drop us some comments there as well. But Tom, I'm looking forward to the bye, and probably not as much as the players are, but I think we talked last week, the team is going into the bye probably healthier than they have been the last several years. And I know you and I are probably looking forward to a bye as well. I got to catch up on the honeydew list. At least that's what I'm doing this weekend. How about you?
No, man. We'll enjoy watching some other football. Maybe watch a little Georgia Bulldogs and check them out, and do a little pre-scouting, and just ready to come back and talk about things after LSU.
Absolutely. Well, hook me up, man. I'll have, ring me up, man. I'll have some brown water ready to go if you want to enjoy scouting Georgia together.
No, that sounds like a plan, man. Well, thanks, guys, for listening, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast for Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.